We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven. I am your host, as always. Joining me today for a special edition of the Guilty as Charged podcast is my good friend Ryan Dyrud, host and creator of the LA Football Network. Good friend, as I mentioned, kind of my boss at LAFB. But Ryan, thanks for joining me, man. How are you doing today?
What's up, brother? It's good to be with you. No, I was getting a little hurt because you guys had me on when Brandon Staley was hired, and I haven't been back since. I don't know what I did wrong, but happy back with you. You guys are crushing it. And no, I'm not your boss. We're just colleagues, but glad to be on Talking Chargers. So thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Of course. Happy to have you. It's been a minute. I know we did a couple things with the Brandon Staley hiring and stuff like that. So you know, very happy with, you know, our relationship and our personal, you know, friendship for sure. Yes. So we're going to talk about the draft and kind of where the Chargers could go from here. But this is your first draft that you're attending in person. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. First one. Excited about it.
This will be my first draft as well. So, you know, kind of before we get started, what are you guys over at LAFB have planned for this weekend?
Yeah, man, we're stoked. I mean, obviously you guys are going to be out there and you're part of LAFB, and I feel like Tyler and Alex are kind of like infiltrated in a way too, even though they're not technically. So I think we'll all be doing stuff together, which will be fun. But, you know, we're doing, obviously, like probably everyone out there, doing shows, live shows all throughout each day, each 3 days. We'll have people in the media workroom as well. We're talking with a couple different of the casinos about actually doing live shows like in the casino, which I think could be fun if it all works out. We'll see. It could be interesting or not. But just draft coverage. We're going to do some social stuff with fans that are there. And, you know, we're staying right in the action, right on the strip. So, you know, we were looking, I think I was talking to you about it before. We're looking at, you know, Airbnbs to go out there and kind of have like a draft house, if you will. And I'm sure just because of the draft being there, it's really popular, but it's like the closest thing that was even worth renting was like 15 miles away. I'm like, well, that's not worth it. I'd rather just be on the strip and be in the action. So we'll be down there hanging out and, you know, working, covering the draft, having some beers, having a good time. So Vegas, can't wait to be there. Excited to see you guys there too.
I know, man, it's going to be so exciting. And, Brooke was making fun of me the other day, 'cause you know, I'm taking work off, from my regular job and going out here with Tyler, and Arjun's going to be there. And you guys, of course. And I'm like, well, this is the first time that it's out west. Like, this is, I've always wanted to go to the draft. It's always been, you know, something that I've wanted to do, but it's always been in New York or Cleveland, or, you know what I mean? Like, so this is the first time that it's out west, and, you know, just thankfully have a situation where I can go. So really excited to get out there, like you mentioned.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, 'cause it was supposed to be in Vegas, remember, 2 years ago in 2020.
Yeah.
And so at the time, when it was announced, my wife was pregnant with my daughter, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to try to go. And then her due date ended up being May 2nd, and the draft with that year was like the 25th or something. I'm like, it's probably cutting it a little close. So I was like, I don't think I can go. So I kind of like, okay, I'll just, you know, cover the draft from home. And then, you know, whoever knows my situation, she ended up coming 5 weeks early, was born May 29th. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, now I can probably go to the draft. And then literally like 24 hours later, the world shut down and the draft ended up going virtual. So now I'm glad we're going to go this year. It all worked out.
2 years later, we finally get to
2 years later
for the draft.
We got it, baby. And it'll be, I'm sure it'll be in LA soon enough too. So
yeah. Yeah. I think next year, right, is supposed to be Kansas City and then mm-hmm. Detroit after that.
Yeah. I think they just announced Detroit. That's right.
So hopefully LA after that. I think the cool thing that will be unique for them doing it in LA is that that SoFi Stadium has that YouTube theater built right into it. Mm-hmm. So they could do everything for the draft right at SoFi Stadium, which I think would be, you know, a very unique draft mm-hmm. experience for casual NFL fans.
So I'm curious now, not to hijack your show here, but we were talking to the LA Tourism Commissioner at Super Bowl about this, but if the draft does come here, do you think they would do it at SoFi, or do you think they'd choose like an iconic place like Santa Monica Pier or the Hollywood Bowl or like some LA iconic thing to do it at? Cause you know, these cities try to like showcase something.
Right.
About them. I wonder what do you think?
I would hope that they would just do it at SoFi. I mean, they did the NFL award show there and I feel like it was, a fantastic event. I mean, Santa Monica Pier is just kind of gross now. It's just not what it used to be. So I don't know, man, I would hope that they would just do it at SoFi. It'd be convenient for most people. The NFL Network office is right there too. So I would think that it would just be easier for everybody at SoFi.
Yeah, it would. He brought up there's a brand new, which I haven't visited yet. I was supposed to go a few weeks ago, but didn't end up being able to make it. But they opened the new motion picture like museum, basically the Academy Awards Museum in Hollywood.
Okay.
And it's super cool. Like it's a huge museum. It's got like this giant like ball dome and it's kind of like really emblazes what like LA is in terms of, you know, Tinseltown and Hollywood. So he was saying like that would be a cool spot. I don't know what the spacing would be like, but yeah, I don't know. A lot of interesting areas you could do it at. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Absolutely excited to see how that kind of pans out. Shifting gears here, of course, to talk about what is really potentially happening with the Chargers. You know, we had some a few interesting nuggets from Tom Telesco today at his press conference. Tom, of course, always playing things close to the vest, but talking about trading up, trading down, and really kind of weighing the cost there. Do you ultimately think the Chargers could potentially trade up, or do you think it's more likely that they trade down if you had to choose between the two?
It's a fun topic to talk about. I'm sure you guys have talked about it ad nauseum. I know we all have. I'm surprised Charger fans still want to hear about it, but let's absolutely. We got three more days to just beat this thing in.
Yeah.
You know, I lean towards my personal belief that they stay put. But, you know, hearing what, like you said, what Tom Telesco said and kind of hearing this stuff come out about Brandon Staley, like really loves Jameson Williams and obviously most likely would need a trade up to get him. I've seen some mocks where he falls to 17 and obviously, you know, all bets are off once the draft starts because there's going to be something crazy that happens. But a guy like that or one of the tackles that they outside of Trevor Penning, which I know you hope they take at 17.
Don't put that out there, man.
I'm going to clip that myself and just put that out there. So of the top 10, you know, Charles Cross and the Alabama tackle, Evan Neal and stuff like that, they would probably have to trade up to get. So
I
think it's definitely like a possibility. But considering they don't have that second rounder, and I think because of where the team is at right now and with what they did in free agency, to me, it kind of makes more sense to go just kind of stay put or trade back, which they probably definitely won't do. But kind of piggybacking off that, and you know, you can tell I host my own show because I'll pose a question to you then. Like, I would not be opposed, considering where this team is in win now mode, in like a Super Bowl window, I wouldn't be opposed to them if they traded next year's first plus this year's first to move up. Like I think I don't want to see them get rid of their third or fourth or fifth this year because I think they need those to kind of build on this roster. But if they think they're in a win now mode, meaning next year's pick is probably going to be 25th or later anyway, like I would not be opposed to them taking 17 next year's first and then moving up into the top 12 and getting one of those premier tackles or that premier receiver. So I don't know your thoughts on that, but if they move up, I like that move better than a bundle of picks this year to move up.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about trading up for a tackle. I mean, I'm a big fan of Charles Cross. I think he is the third, you know, best tackle in this class. And to me, there's just a really big, significant drop off from him to whoever you think the fourth tackle is. You know, I know there's a lot of fans of Trevor Penning out there. And even if you are optimistic about Trevor Penning's immediate future, I would still think that somebody like Charles Cross and Trevor Penning, there's a significant gap between the two. So, you know, I've said before on our show and on LAFB articles, I think Abraham Lucas for me is the fourth best tackle in this class, but I have, you know, a first round grade on Cross and a low third round grade on Lucas. So, I mean, I like Lucas a lot and I would be comfortable with the Chargers taking him if he's there in the third round, but that gap is just so big in my opinion. So I'm okay trading next year's first for one of the premier offensive tackles. I think that is worth it. I would also at least consider maybe Derek Stingley. You know, we've heard through a couple people that they really, really, really like Derek Stingley and have him incredibly high was the way that our source put it to us, which to me made it seem like he's a top three player on their board. So that would be okay for me. I'm not trading a future first for a receiver when you could probably just stick and pick a receiver at 17. Maybe it's an Olave, maybe it's a Jahan Dotson, whoever kind of is higher on their board. I don't really feel like there's that much of a difference between the two where I would consider trading a future first to make that happen.
Yeah. No, I agree with that too, just because there's so much, you know, depth at receiver. So like why, unless you're absolutely in love with Jameson Williams, which, you know, I know some people are, I'm not as much in that camp to trade a first for him, but yeah, the tackles, because then you're set, right? You're booking tackles with Slater and whether it's Cross or one of the other guys, you're set. And you really then can take the rest of the draft to just fill out depth, really, maybe get a, you know, an edge guy or a backer later on. But yeah, I would feel much more comfortable trading a first for a tackle than trading, you know, a third and a fourth to move up to 15 or six or like 13 or 14 and take our chances there. I just think you need those back end picks this year.
No, I think if in terms of trading up, you know, a few spots, I think the Chargers are just in a tough spot because they don't have that second round pick, which is something that Tom Telesco talked about. So, I mean, like, let's say, you know, you're trading up to 12 with the Vikings for, you know, whoever you want to target. Maybe Derek Stingley falls. Maybe you are a big fan of Jordan Davis or whatever. You know, you're trading up to 12. I think you're ideally coming to the table and saying, hey, we'll give you next year's second rounder. But then you look at a team like the Chiefs and the Packers who have multiple first round picks, the Steelers who could potentially be looking to move up for a quarterback. They actually have a second round pick. So I just think the Chargers are in a tough spot when it comes to trading up in the draft, even if it's just, you know, four or five spots.
Yeah, I would agree. It's which I don't think, I hope anyway, no one's upset about when you get Khalil Mack. Like, I hope they're not like, oh man, I wish we had that second round pick back. And ideally trading back makes the most sense, but I just, you know, we know Tom Telesco doesn't do that. So
I think for me, when it comes to like the Khalil Mack and not having the second round pick, it doesn't change how I feel. Like, I'm so happy that Khalil Mack is on this team. But what it changes is for me is the strategy in the first round, because I think if you have your first and your second round pick, you can afford to take a bigger swing in the first round on maybe kind of a higher upside, lower floor kind of player like a Trevor Penning, who I'm not like the biggest fan of. But, you know, if you have 17 and say 46 or 47 or wherever they were slated, and, you know, at 47, you can get a talented immediate starter or contributor at edge or at corner, then I'm kind of okay with taking the developmental tackle at 17. But now, because you don't have that second round pick and now there's 50 picks in between your first and next pick, I'm not looking to take on a developmental player. I'm looking for an immediate contributor, whether that's a guard or a receiver or a corner or wherever you decide.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, if you're in the top 20 picks, I mean, you should be drafting, you would hope, a day one starter, or at least a fringe starter, not a Trey Pipkins, right? Who's going to have to develop behind guys and you're going to have to teach things out of him and whatnot. That's not what you want in those top 20 selection areas. So, I mean, it's going to be really fun to watch, Steven, because it's just like this board can fall so many ways. It's the first year I can remember where there's so much uncertainty. Like, obviously every year there's some uncertainty, but this year there's so much just because A, the quarterback class is weak. B, like, no one has a true number one player at most, like almost every position has like differing opinions, right? Like, I feel like last year it was like far and away, like, Ja'Marr Chase was the number one receiver. It was like pretty damn close. It was Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater were your tackles.
Right.
This year, it's like so many different opinions from 1 through 5 at like every position. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, last year we knew, everybody knew that the first 3 picks were going to be quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And then the next 3 picks, you knew that Ja'Marr Chase, Penei Sewell, Kyle Pitts, probably in some kind of order.
Yep.
And then you kind of, you know, draft starts at 7 kind of mentality. This year, I mean, Trayvon Walker is now the favorite for number 1, which we both think is ridiculous. Yep. You know, now there's talk today that the New York Jets would take Jermaine Johnson over Kayvon Thibodeau. I mean, there's all the Sauce Gardner range. Like, really, I have like no clue what happens. Like, what if the Detroit Lions take Kayvon Thibodeau over Aiden Hutchinson? Then kind of what happens? What if the Jaguars take Ike Ekwonu instead of a pass rusher, like everybody thinks? Yeah. Like, I think there's just so much intrigue at the top. And then you have the Panthers and their desperation for a quarterback. I mean, the Steelers need a quarterback. The Saints in that trade and kind of how that's looming over everything. There's just like so many possibilities that can happen. And obviously the Chargers just kind of sitting there at 17, you know, waiting to see what happens in front of them.
Yeah. Which I think they're in a good spot over. I know it's a weird situation. You said it's a tough situation, but I think overall it's a good spot. Obviously we, you know, it'd be nice to be higher up, blah, 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 blah. But, question for you, this is going to be off topic a little bit, but do you think Baker Mayfield gets dealt on draft day? Like, let's say, I know the Panthers have come out and said they're not trading for him before the draft, but let's say the draft kicks off and they're like, all right, you know what? Like, let's go after Baker now. Do you think that any possibility that happens?
I mean, never say never, of course. I would think that the Panthers or the Seahawks, who are kind of the two likely teams, really the only teams who need a starter, I think they would kind of prefer to wait and see how the draft pans out. Yeah. You know, Matt Corral went very, very high in the LAFB mock drafts that we did. but I mean, if the Seahawks can maybe trade back up to like 32 with the Lions or 31 with the Bengals or something and get Matt Corral there, then obviously that takes another, you know, chess piece off the board. And, you know, the Panthers don't have draft capital to trade this year. Like,
yeah,
they need to make these picks. And so if you take a Charles Cross at 6 or Evan Neal or whichever one kind of is left, then after the draft, you know, in the next couple of weeks, say, hey, we would like Baker Mayfield. Like, how can we make this happen? So I lean towards it happening after for Baker.
Yeah, it'll be the last time I can remember it kind of happening was it Kyler Murray's draft when the Cardinals drafted Murray and then traded Rosen like a round later, or like not even a round later, like an hour later, all of a sudden they traded Rosen to the Dolphins. So I would be interested to see if like, okay, the Panthers take a tackle and then say, you know what? Cleveland has no ground to stand on. Like, they already signed Deshaun Watson. They're already paying him a ton of money. Like, we can get Baker for literally a 5th round 2023 pick. Like, why wouldn't we do that? So I'll be interested to see.
Now, like you said, you know, going back a little bit, I do think the Chargers are really in a fantastic position. I think, you know, Tom Telesco has never traded down, but I do think that this is as good of a year as any, because they don't need a receiver. Like, I'm sure they could take a Chris Olave or Jameson Williams if he falls. But, you know, like, let's say the Packers really want one, or the Titans or the Cowboys or whatever, you know, the Steelers taking a quarterback, some kind of movement around the Titans potentially taking a quarterback. So I think the Chargers are in a good perspective from that standpoint, and they could just stick and pick. I mean, everybody knows how much I love Zion Johnson. Albert Breer did say that he's in play at 17, which of course would make me very, very happy. But any player to you that you would be like most pleased with at 17 for the Chargers that you think could be a good fit going forward?
Well, Zion Johnson, I think, is very good. And I know I've seen some people say, okay, well, you know, trade down and then take Zion, which in a perfect world, obviously, but if he's, their guy, if he's their guy and they feel good about him, I think that's a great pick, because then you have a center, not a center, but a centerpiece on the interior of the offensive line for many years to come. And you're just continuing to build for the future there. And I know we've talked about it, and I'm sure you guys have, but you know, about kicking Matt Filer. I know that's not the best case scenario, but at least it's on the table. You can do that if a guy like Zion falls. You know, I like the corners. I like Trent McDuffie if he were to fall there. I don't think there's any way in the world that Derek Stingley falls, but obviously if he does, that's a slam dunk. I think that's probably the pick if he does fall. You know, Jordan Davis is a big name. There was the hot name early on. I'm not as high on him, but I'm not low on him either. I mean, I think it's a solid pick, but I think what they did in the offseason at the position, they don't really need to do that by any means. And it just kind of depends if who's there with him, right? Like if your top receivers are all gone, your top tackles are all gone, and you don't want to take a guard yet in Zion Johnson, then maybe that is the pick. But I think that there's better value at other positions that are more needed right now. The last one I'll say, and I know this is, I talked about it on my show that we just recorded not too long ago, and I know me and you have kind of touched on it a little bit, and it would probably shock a ton of people, but I think, you know, a player like Devin Lloyd would be interesting here at 17, because to me, it's a position of need. It's, you know, when you're going into the season with a somewhat hobbled and still unknown Kenneth Murray and a Drew Tranquil that plays good when healthy, but rarely is healthy. And you can get a backer like Devin Lloyd that may be the best, you know, inside off ball linebacker that we've seen in quite some time, in my opinion, even though for some reason he's mocked in the 20s. I mean, I know how much you love Devin Lloyd as a player, not necessarily for the Chargers, but as a player from Utah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying that would be my absolute favorite pick, but I would actually like it. And I think there's a lot to be said where, you know, I know there's talk about Staley doesn't value linebackers, which I think is very true to an extent, especially when it comes to signing backers. But, you know, he was on that Chicago team with Vic Fangio when they took Roquan Smith in the top 10, and he became a very, very good backer for the Chicago Bears. And Brandon Staley was instrumental in the development of Roquan Smith. So, it wouldn't shock me as much as I'm sure other people would be shocked. I know it'd be very controversial. I don't think it would be hated. I don't know if it'd be hated as much as like a Trevor Penning pick would be, but it'd be more of a head scratcher. Like, what are we doing here? But Staley wasn't there when they drafted Kenneth Murray. So I could see it.
No, I mean, in terms of the fan perspective, right? Like I see a bunch of fan wish lists and it's like, won't hate. And they put Devin Lloyd in that category. And I'm like, Devin Lloyd's a really freaking good football player. Like I do think that Devin Lloyd, you know, is the kind of linebacker that Staley would love to have. I just don't know. What I know about Brandon Staley is that he's going to place a premium value on premium positions. And I just don't know if the linebacker position is that for him. And I also think this linebacker class is really deep. I think you can get quality starters, later on in the draft. So I don't know, man. Like I've been so conflicted throughout this whole process with Devin Lloyd and the Chargers, because obviously I love him. He's one of my favorite Utah football players of all time. And he's a really good football player. Like it's not just me, you know, and my Utah bias. So it definitely is a need. He's a great football player. I do think that would be a good pick, but I just don't know if Brandon Staley would be willing to, you know, spend that premium of a pick on a linebacker.
Yeah. Well, and in just my opinion, this is not any insider information, but in my opinion, I think he goes higher than where he's getting mocked anyway. Like everyone's mocking him in the 20s as the first backer taken. And I know that the defenses has kind of shifted a little bit, but we've seen when you have a backer like a Bobby Wagner, which I think Devin Lloyd has that ceiling to be, you know, we saw Isaiah Simmons go sixth overall just, you know, two years ago and just, or not sixth overall, but what do you go seven right after Justin Herbert? Right after Herbert. So, I mean, we've seen still teams that do value that super uber talent. So I think he ends up going higher anyway, but if he's there at 17, I'm about it. Depending who's there, obviously.
Yeah.
Charles Cross is there at 17, then yeah, that's the pick.
No, I mean, I think if you're in a world, right, where it's like, you know, you're debating between potentially Devin Lloyd and Chris Olave and Zion Johnson, then there's definitely an argument to be had that Devin Lloyd fills the biggest position of need and he is the best player on the board. So, you know, again, I will be very happy if Devin Lloyd is a Charger. I'm buying that jersey the second it happens, but it's just a really interesting spot in terms of roster building philosophy and positional value for a guy like Devin Lloyd.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say with Staley in regards to the backer position is when he looks at that specific, like if he's running like out of nickel and dime sets and only has one backer on the field, the guy needs to be able to cover, but also be great in run defense. And a guy like Kaiser White, who, you know, became beloved, had a breakout season. But, and again, we've all talked PFF is not the end all be all, but it's a good measuring stick. You know, he graded out at like 61 in run defense. Well, Devin Lloyd graded out over 80 in both coverage and both run defense. So he kind of checks those boxes as, hey, if we're going one backer sets, this guy can do it all. And now I can really focus on my secondary and my defensive line strategy because I have that one backer I can put on the island and really cover both facets. Where Kaiser White, as good as he grew to be, he still really wasn't that do it all guy that we could really trust. So that's where I think there is that value that could end up coming into play because they saw what he was able to do for his entire time at Utah.
Yeah, well, see, this is why I'm glad we have you on, because we haven't talked a whole lot about Devin Lloyd going to the Chargers, because it's just, you know, the three of us don't really think that it's something that would happen. So different perspectives are always important. I want to shift gears a little bit here and not necessarily talk about specific players that you like for the Chargers on day two or day three. Of course, you can mention them. But what's kind of your preference in terms of strategy, maybe positions, more so than anything else that you think the Chargers should look to do on day two? Of course, they only have the one third round pick, and then day three as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's overstated, but all depends on what they end up doing at 17 to shift things. But I think you at some point, obviously, you need to get another secondary guy. And you could probably use both safety and corner. You know, we saw how the injuries stacked up at safety, really. And I think me and you are both pretty high on Mark Webb. I was pretty high on him last year when they drafted in the second round, but obviously, unfortunately, just couldn't stay healthy. I think he'll be, you know, obviously healthy going into the year, but they do want to have some more draft capital allocated for that position. I think Staley has a good eye for that position, as he's kind of proven throughout his track record in coaching. So I would definitely see a day three, you know, safety value. I think day two, well, just that third. Really, okay, let's talk first about the third, because the third is so contingent, I think, on like 17. Like if they go receiver or Devin Lloyd or corner, it's like you almost have to take some sort of offensive lineman, right? In the third, you like have to at that point. And not necessarily have to take a tackle because you don't want to reach, but there has to be some sort of offensive lineman that you take. So, which I could see definitely being the play if, because I think there'll just be more value at 17 outside of the tackles. So I think the third round pick is probably looking like an offensive lineman. And then when we get to, you know, four through seven, as I mentioned, the safety, a corner, I think a running back is a good need. I like Keonta Ingram. I'm always biased towards the LA guys just because I know them better. Obviously I watch every game of theirs like live in person. But Keonta Ingram's a back that, you know, they can probably get late. I think he mixes really well with Austin Ekeler, and he has not a lot of wear on his tires. Like he transferred from Texas last year to USC and still barely had 100 carries. So the guy is not someone coming in like those Wisconsin backs that are, you know, averaging 300 touches a year.
Yeah.
Like he's a very underutilized running back that has a good skill set, great speed, can break tackles. And you know, they're going to take it back probably at some point with one of those picks. So I'm sure we can get more into it, but without just being super long winded here, I think safety, corner, and then offensive line in the third, and then a running back at some point in those late rounds. And then if you don't do a receiver in the first, you got to get some sort of speed receiver at some point, I think, which there's a bevy of them, luckily. So I think they have options there.
In that specific position group, the Chargers have done a ton of homework on those kind of day three receivers. So that's the thing, at least for me at that position. If they're not taking Chris Olave or Jameson Williams at 17, I think they honestly wait until like late in the draft, like round six, seven, to kind of address that spot. You mentioned Keonta Ingram. I've talked a lot about him on our show a little bit, because he's always kind of my, okay, I can't find a running back in the third round, in the fourth round, the fifth round. Okay, I'm just going to take Keonta Ingram late in the sixth round. Like that's that's always the go-to mock draft pick for me.
Yeah.
But I do, again, I think he's a really good player. And, you know, you mentioned Pro Football Focus and it being a good resource. Keonta Ingram actually has a higher elusiveness rating than Breece Hall, who is kind of the consensus RB1 in this draft. So, you know, I'm working on an all underrated team article for LAFB, selfish plug, go check it out. And Keonta Ingram has some like legitimately good data to kind of prop up how we are feeling about him. And I think he's a really fantastic player.
Yeah. Well, I think his draft stock is kind of rising too. It seems like in these last few weeks, like I've seen some people start, he's like top five in their running backs. Like who knows where those running backs are taken, but I've seen him climb into their big board for running backs. So I think he's a talented player that, not a lot of people know about, but, even with USC, when he came in, like Vavai Malapaya was like the unquestioned starter. And by week four, it was Keonta Ingram, like hands down, like took over that backfield and was their featured back, which isn't saying much with how poor that offense ran, but he was him and Drake London were basically the two bright spots, and that was it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's so important though, like for these running backs, right? Because they're, you know, not all of them are going to come into the NFL with ideal situations. And, you know, they've got to be able to have that skill set for me to be able to make things happen when your offensive line is not really doing very well. And your quarterback is not somebody that can kind of stretch the field, and you're playing against stack boxes. So I think it is an important skill set to have. It's definitely something that I've kind of lead on. Granted, like, you know, there's always these attributes that are influenced that we look for from, you know, players that we loved. And so like all the running backs that I like, all my running back knowledge, like I always lean back on like my influences of LT, right? Like just that guy who's able to make people miss at any moment. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any kind of elusiveness, if you can't make people miss in the hole as a running back, I'm out. Like I do not, it's not my kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not wrong. I mean, we all stem like from some sort of historical data point or fanhood or something. So I kind of look at it the same way. And the one position I didn't mention, but obviously needs to be mentioned, you can probably touch more on it, but I mean, edge is probably a position you're going to have to take eventually, because there's no depth there. So you're going to have to add someone in those mid-tier rounds. And I mean, would it shock you? Would it shock the world if they went edge at 17 if one of these big names falls?
I mean, it would have to take a fall. I mean, the George Karloftis thing is really interesting. He's, you know, kind of perceived as potentially falling out of the second round.
Yeah,
I don't think he really is a clean fit for what Staley really likes. And this is a good, you know, edge rusher class. You know, we can talk about another USC guy, Drake Jackson. I think there's Mynjé Sanders, who's been, you know, kind of forgotten about in this edge rusher class. You know, Nick Bonito, D'Angelo Malone, like that group of players could be an option for them in the second, in the third round. But again, like if they take a receiver or a corner in the first round, that third round pick is almost has to be an offensive lineman of some sort. And then you're kind of in the developmental edge rusher crowd after that. So it's just going to be a really interesting balancing act that the Chargers are going to be using this year. Again, one of the reasons why I wish that they could trade back, or, you know, be aggressive on day two and use some of those compensatory picks and trade up into the draft and kind of solidify the trenches a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they could somehow get back in that second round, that would be best case scenario, I think. Cause then they could, I think in the first round, they definitely will go BPA in some regard overall, but it'll be, it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be, who knows how the board's going to fall. That's what makes it so fun.
It's going to be so exciting, man. So many possibilities. We'll get you out of here on this. I always like to ask my guests this question. Any favorite sleepers that you like, that you feel like maybe be a little underrated, a little disrespected throughout this process?
Oh, man. Well, I have a few, but I'll stick with my LA roots. I love Kyle Phillips out of UCLA. I mean, I think he has like a fourth or fifth round grade by most people, which is probably where he'll end up going, but I think he's just a special player. You know, he's not your burner, which I think he fits for the Chargers, but he's not like the receiver the Chargers fans want, right? They want your 4.3 speed burner guy that can fit differently. But Kyle Phillips is just truly a do-it-all possession receiver. We got to have it. I mean, he's kind of similar in that aspect to Keenan Allen, I guess, but, you know, different size, a couple different intangibles. He's also a return guy, so they could use him in their return game. I know they signed a return guy to Washington, so they don't really need that, but he has that in his back pocket. Also had a punt return touchdown last year that was electrifying. So he absolutely tore it up at the Shrine Bowl, was uncoverable at the Shrine Bowl. And so I think he's a guy that teams know his value. You know, I was at UCLA games and there were a number of scouts there, and their scouts were probably watching Sean Ryan and him and Greg Dulcich were probably the three players they were watching. But I just don't think the media or fans have really caught into how special of a player he can be. And he has, I know it's such an annoying comparison comparing, you know, two white receivers, but he has kind of that Cooper Kupp vibes where he'll be a mid-round selection, but can really become a staple in an offense and be a really productive receiver 2 or 3 years into his career and kind of, you know, surprise people like, man, we got this guy in the fourth round. He's averaging 900 to 1,200 yards a year. So I think he has that kind of value and someone that people should start taking notice of.
Yeah, man, I think the Kyle Phillips talk, he got a little bit of a surge after the Shrine Bowl, and now it's kind of died down after teams are kind of, you know, looking into more of the bigger physical guys or like the faster guys. And I think he's being unfairly penciled in as a slot only player because he could do a lot of different things for your football team. I mean, if you go back and watch some of the 2020 games, UCLA was using him as kind of a running back receiver hybrid in a few games. And so he can play on the outside. I think he's 5'11 and close to 6 feet tall. So it's not like he's a 5'8 slot guy only kind of player. So I like Phillips a lot. He and made my top 10 list initially. And then I really got into Bo Melton and a couple other receivers, Jabari Robertson. But he's still in my top 12, man. I really like Kyle Phillips for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a lot of fun to watch. It's just a good team guy, team leader, which I know, you know, is something important that these teams look for too. Not just the talent. They got to see what these guys are like in the locker room, and Kyle Phillips is all that in spades. So, interesting. I'm interested to see where he goes. I was, you know, me, I was so high on Dimitri Felton last year, who I was like, there's no way this guy goes past like the fourth or fifth round. He went in the sixth. but I think he turned out some good stuff with Cleveland and will have a bigger role this year. But Phillips, I think, I think he's in that probably fourth round range or so.
Yeah, definitely. So, Ryan, this has been great, man. Lots of good different topics here. Where can some of our listeners find your guys' stuff over at LAFB and some of mine, I guess, as well?
Yeah, brother. Thanks for having me. Obviously, you guys are crushing it. Excited to hang out with all you guys at the draft. As you know, Steven writes for LAFB, so make sure to check out all the stuff. But you can find me at Ryan Dyer at LAFB on Twitter. Site is just LAFB Network. All of our, you know, 12 podcasts and shows are all housed there, so pretty easy to find. So, but thanks, man. Fun as always.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of USC, you know, you got to be able to check out Sua Craven's upcoming podcast as well on the LAFB Network. So, lots of great stuff happening. Make sure and check us out over there. Ryan, thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I'll talk to you later.